From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Kayla DeRoche. Coming up this week, the Tanner Crab Fishery opened in the Kodiak Management Area for the first time since 2013. Fishermen geared up to try their luck last week. Also, the International Pacific Halibut Commission is meeting in Portland. IPHC is looking at the total allowable catch for halibut along the West Coast, and that's likely to lead to some heated debate. That and more coming up in this week's Alaska Fisheries Report.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
The International Pacific Halibut Commission, or IPHC, will set the total allowable catch for halibut along the West Coast this week. At its interim meeting back in November, IPHC scientists suggested slashing 2018's catch by 24% for both commercial and charter operations, a reduction of about 7.5 million pounds. That's likely to lead to a heated debate throughout the commission's meeting in Portland this week. KBBI's Aaron Bolton has more.
Historically, Pacific halibut hasn't really had a direct competitor. And as stocks and quotas have steadily declined since the mid-2000s, prices have gone up. It's simple supply and demand, and prices have been high in recent years, hovering around $7 per pound at the docks in Homer.
It's the most valuable per pound species of any fish in Alaska, but there's a good reason for that. A lot of affluent customers out there are, that's what they want, and that's what they pay up for.
Andy Wink is a fisheries analyst and runs his own firm, Wink Research and Consulting. But ex-vessel prices came down a little bit in 2017, and Wink says wholesale prices decreased too, dropping by about 6% in Canada, which is the closest comparison to the U.S. market until 2017 data is released. Those price drops could be because more Atlantic halibut is making its way onto the market. According to the National Marine Fisheries Service, Atlantic halibut imports were up 9.5% last year, with the largest volume coming from Canada. Landings by U.S. fishermen have also been increasing. And that's making things a bit more difficult for fish buyers in Alaska. Bill Sullivan owns Kachemak Bay Seafoods, a small fish buyer and processor on the Homer Spit. In the past, Sullivan has sold a good portion of the halibut he buys to wholesalers in Boston and New York. I caught him on a ski trip in Girdwood.
It's just less and less interest all the time from the East Coast because their stocks of halibut have been increasing quite a bit, so there hasn't been really much opportunities we have had in the past.
Other fish buyers have also been feeling the pain. Mike McCune manages the Alaskan Fish Factory in Homer, and he says high Pacific halibut prices, while good for fishermen, may be too high to compete with its new cheap competitor.
Other whitefish are also competitors, the codfish, all the way down to the tilapia, for that matter. But for the most part, the East Coast halibut is kind of a new product, which is very favorable to our product.
Atlantic halibut hasn't really been a competitor until now because stocks were overfished in the 1800s and haven't completely rebounded. That new competition has led smaller buyers like Sullivan to focus on selling his product in-state. And that competition is starting to affect fishermen as well.
There was a lot less interest in buying loads when we came to town, and for the first time I had heard of competition from East Coast halibut, and it was a little disconcerting there because all of a sudden, we have something else to compete with, which is just driving the price down.
Malcolm Milne is the president of the North Pacific Fisheries Association. Milne says for the first time, fish buyers were turning away loads of halibut last year. But he adds this year's declining quotas will have a more immediate impact on fishermen's bottom line. But with more fish on the East Coast, the market may not compensate for this year's potentially large cut to Pacific halibut quotas like it has in the past. Wink, who we heard from earlier, says fish buyers will need to find a way to stay connected in the market.
Hopefully we can keep finding and keep connected with those consumers, because again, we're going to need as much value as possible to offset some of these lower tax.
And Wink adds, the market will likely provide some valuable feedback this year on the impact of more East Coast halibut. Reporting in Homer, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
After a few weather delays, the Tana crab fishery opened last Thursday. It's the first time the fishery has been open in the Kodiak area since 2013. KMXT dropped by the harbor on Near Island to talk with fishermen before they set off.
Hey, this one's done. This one's done.
Fisherman Clint Johnson hands an empty bucket of hydraulic fuel up to his crewmate. He says they have 1,000 gallons, the max the vessel can take.
Hydraulic's like the blood of this operation. Without it, we're just dead in the water.
It tops the list the crew needs to check off in the next few hours.
A little bit of gas, bait, and go.
Johnson says it's expensive to gear up, and it's also no sure thing that the crew will earn more than it pays out.
We might just do it because it's fun, or you might need to make money and pay the bills in case it's a different operation. This is not cooperating. Fair enough.
Got to pay for everything, so got to do that at least. If we make more than that for the effort, great.
Johnson says he makes his living off salmon, and the last time he fished for Tanner crab was in the 90s. He says the vessel, the Kawick, hasn't been rigged for crab for 30 years.
But we borrowed all the gear. Fire in the hall.
On a nearby float, the Lady Ashley is also getting ready. Jim Monroe and his crew member peer into the vessel's engine room, which is less a room and more of a nook.
Okay, let's see. You got bubbles?
They're all gone. I'm just getting straight fuel.
Two other crew members are on board, and Monroe says it wasn't hard to find people to hire for the trip.
For this little season, there's a lot of interest because nobody's been doing anything for a while. It can be kind of lucrative if you get on and the price is right.
His daughter, Darlene Monroe, is optimistic.
It's been a few years since I've done it, so I hope that we're on them. They've had a lower reporting, so I'm not expecting a whole lot, but hoping for the best.
Like the Kawick, the Lady Ashley is about to head off. Crews started warming up their engines as soon as registration wrapped up Wednesday morning. That's according to Nat Nichols, Alaska Department of Fish and Game Area Management Biologist for the Groundfish, Shellfish, and Dive Fisheries. Nichols says the guideline harvest level is 400,000 pounds.
In the past, that's brought out a number of participants in the mid-30s. This year, we're going to end up in the mid-50s, most likely. Some of that's probably due to the fact that cod fishing is a bit slow this year, and also just that we haven't had a fishery in 4 years, so there's a little more excitement because of that.
Fishermen call in their catches by radio, and the fishery closed on Monday. In Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their family. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
After being closed last year, the Eastern Aleutian District Tanner crab fishery opened last week. Trawl surveys from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game showed stocks were just high enough to open one section. Roger Rowland is a local commercial fisherman who primarily focuses on salmon and cod, but he's participated in this Tanner crab fishery nearly every year and has been open for the past two decades. Unlike Bering Sea crabbing, this fishery is not rationalized. It's derby style. The fishermen are not guaranteed a share of the crab. And this year, Roland is not the only boat going after the 35,000-pound quota.
It'll be friendly competition, sure, and I fully expect to be setting gear at noon on opening day. I won't wait. I will make sure I'm there and ready right at the start.
The fishermen are not able to fish all night. They are restricted and can only operate pots from 8 a.m. until 6 p.m., The fishery closes by regulation on March 31st.
This is Alaska Water Wars, a news project sharing the stories of Alaska Native people and the prospect of large natural resource development projects coming to their homelands. This five-part series focuses on the Pebble Mine project near Bristol Bay. Dacia Eaton reports.
Commercial fishermen are united in their opposition to development of the Pebble Mine in southwest Alaska. But the thousands of native people who live in the region are divided on the issue. While some villages remain neutral on the project, taking a wait-and-see approach, many also worry that mining could impact drinking water, fish, and their cultures. Julia Salmon's life in the small village of Igiagig alongside the Quijack River revolves around subsistence.
Those are the two main things of my life I seem to know of, fish and berries.
Igiagig is situated where the Quijack River flows out of Lake Iliamna, down toward Bristol Bay, about 50 miles from the mine site. It's fall, and her freezer is full.
Down below is all fish, smoked salmon, or two-day smoke, the dried ones, and fillet. And the top is filling up with berries.
Julia is Yupik, Alaska native. Where she lives, having a full freezer represents its own kind of wealth. Living in accordance with ancient traditions, people are happy to share with their extended families, the elderly, and the community at large. Julia says when she first heard about plans to build a mine upstream from her village, she felt angry.
When I first heard about it, I said, F them. I don't like that digging up our ground and putting all these toxins.
Her daughter, Alexana, is more diplomatic.
The change that will come with a development of that size will affect all levels of our life.
Alexana is village council president and holds several other leadership positions in the region. Igiagig has officially remained neutral on the project, but people are worried about changes mining could bring, she says, especially to water.
Well, our river is crystal clear and everybody really prides being able to still drink the water. It's the best tasting water on earth. And we have all different species of fish that we rely on and the migrating birds. And that tundra landscape supports a lot of different berries. Berry picking is very popular.
The arrival of salmon each summer brings the community together. It's an unbroken link to their ancestors, she says. And University of Alaska Anchorage professor of anthropology, Alan Boris, agrees. He contributed research from Bristol Bay Native Villages to the EPA's watershed assessment, on which the agency based its preliminary decision protecting Bristol Bay from a large mine.
The people of those villages have successfully made the transition from prehistory to the present based on the same keystone species, salmon. So they've been harvesting salmon for 4,000 years, and that's continued to this day. This is a rare thing in America. It's a rare thing in the world to have made that transition and have many of the traditional practices still intact.
Alexana Salmon says she knows her life in Igiagig is special. Life there shelters her, she says, from the consumerism that drives mines to be built. Even so, she recently accepted a paid position on an advisory committee for the project.
The mining company is going to prove that fish and mining can coexist. They will prove that. It is existing elsewhere in the world. For a moment in time, they'll coexist.
She says if the mine is built, she wants to be sure she has a seat at the table, as choices are made that could affect the region for a long time to come. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KBBI's Aaron Bolton in Homer, KNBA's Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, and KUCB's Zoe Sobel in Unalaska. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche. Thank you.